Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. The fake news stories that surfaced during the presidential election are getting all sorts of criticism from politicians, from academics, and even from the technology giants who featured those stories on their media platforms. President Obama warned about fake news stories in a press conference last week.
Particularly in an age of social media where so many people are getting their information in sound bites and snippets off their phones. If we can't discriminate between serious arguments and propaganda, then we have problems.
A Massachusetts professor also thinks that the fake news stories, usually on social media, cause problems for her students. So Merrimack College Communications Professor Melissa Zimdars drew up a list of fake news sites to share with her students. She's with us now via Skype to talk more about it. Professor, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you as well. Did you see any fake news stories during this election? How do you tell if something is real or fake? Facebook and Google say they are taking steps to better review the information on their sites. Should they? And have you ever read a story online and later found out that it wasn't true? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Melissa, let's go to you first. For those who haven't seen your list of fake news sites, can you describe it and give us a few examples of who is on the list?
Sure. The first important thing to note is that it doesn't just include fake news. So it includes some fake news sites as well as others that are misleading or maybe could be considered propaganda, like Barack Obama says. Other sites may be clickbaity or they're satirical sites that could be circulated as actual news. Mm-hmm. So one example of a fake news site would be 70news.wordpress.com, which is the sort of infamous site that was reporting Hillary Clinton lost the popular vote in the recent presidential election.
Mm-hmm. Give us some examples of fake news stories that folks might have seen during the election as well.
Well, that's a major one. Others could just be different claims about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I'm having a difficult time thinking of one off the top of my head.
How about the Pope? The Pope endorsing Donald Trump.
Yes.
I mean, there were all kinds of stories, and I just want to jog people's memories of exactly what we're talking about here. They may not remember the site name itself, like 70newswordpress.com or something, but the stories they may remember. And I'm wondering, it's difficult, I think, to determine from a reader standpoint what is fake news. So how do you advise your students how to do that and others?
Yeah, so the first thing I advise them is just to read widely. So even mainstream journalism often is framed in particular ways and has particular biases. So whatever they're reading, they should always try to find other sources on the topic. There's other things they could do, just paying attention to the domain name. Usually a news website won't have .blogger or .wordpress in it. Mm-hmm. You can also look out for the style of the website. If they frequently use all caps to express particular emotions or to emphasize particular words, like Hillary Clinton destroys Donald Trump, normally that's a sign of clickbait or exaggeration, and you should keep on reading somewhere else.
So watch out for incendiary language, check the domain name. Those are all good pieces of advice. But it's my understanding a lot of these stories have some basis in truth, and then they're just exaggerated and sort of twisted to reflect a particular viewpoint. Is that typically the case?
Yes, and actually those are the sites that I am personally most concerned with, so less the outright completely fake news, and more the sites where there's a kernel of truth, but that kernel of truth is surrounded by a lot of false claims, or it's completely decontextualized from what happened. And those are often coming up from a particular point of view, and they have a particular agenda that they're looking to serve.
Now, you posted this list of fake news sites, what, about a week ago, and you've had to take it down. Can you explain why?
Yes, I took the site down partially because it circulated much. I didn't think it would circulate at all, and it did. And I think it needs more information. It was something that I was able to talk through with my class. So without that, being able to talk through it, I want to make sure that it's serving the right purpose. And I was also increasingly concerned with some of the emails and Facebook messages I was receiving from readers of some of the sites on the list that were fairly violent and harassing.
You got violent messages and harassed. Like what? What would people say?
You know, that they would hope that I would be shot or even raped. Just very cruel things. I've also just been signed up for a lot of kind of troll-like things. Like, apparently I've been seeking plastic surgery consultations or test driving cars around the country. And that kind of stuff I don't mind. But the ones talking about physically harming me or my colleagues is disconcerting for sure.
Because you made a list of sites that you suggest folks should use when trying to discern whether something is real or fake news.
Yes. And so some of these websites kind of proved why they're on the list by encouraging their readers to, you know, to hack into my info or find info about me or contact me and harass me. And the way they reported on the list is mostly based in falseness. So they maybe have my name right, but they have my intentions completely wrong and a lot of other information completely wrong about me.
Hmm. Do you think, do those threats, does that suggest to you at all that maybe what we're talking about here is almost a cultural issue, that people just want to read things that they agree with?
I think there's definitely something to that. So just generally, we tend to seek out information and stories that already affirms our belief. And so when I'm challenging that, the response isn't for some people to think critically about what I'm challenging, but rather it's kind of causing them to dig in their heels a little further, saying that I'm trying to prevent the truth from coming out rather than encouraging a variety of reading to get at a greater sense of truth.
I want to remind our listeners that we are taking input from you as well here. Have you seen any fake news stories on social media? What should be done about fake news stories? How do you determine what you're going to believe, that what you read on the online media landscape, whether it's true or not? And should social media companies get involved? Who should be the curator of this information? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. I'd like to go to Susan from Worcester, who's on the line. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I am a teacher as well, and I teach high school and middle school. One of the greatest challenges is I teach kids how to evaluate websites, but when they're on fake websites, they can't discern the information. So I've now had to completely change the internet, and I encourage them and I teach them about using traditional media, which is, you know, pre-internet, and how to use the information from traditional media sources, and those are the places where you're going to get, you know, accurate information, and not to use internet sites for news, and rather magazine site, you know, using databases to find traditional media articles.
And that's very difficult, isn't it? I mean, what we know now is most young people get their news from social media.
Yes.
So
it is very challenging because they think that it's on the internet, so the internet is easy and it must be okay. And that's the greatest challenge, because it's not necessarily getting information they agree with. It's just being able to discern the information. And if they don't have any background knowledge, they can't discern if it's a true site. And I too have told kids about fake news sites, and I give them a whole lesson about fake information on the internet, and they kind of laugh and think that can't possibly be untrue. And so we're essentially creating a generation of kids who are not able to critically think and evaluate information.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say traditional media, I'm wondering how many are on that list? You don't need to list them all, but is it like a half a dozen traditional media companies, and you tell your students to only focus on them and others may be a little more suspect?
Well, I tell them, the magazines that are, you know, news magazines and traditional newspapers the major newspapers that we have, the newspaper of record. I explain to them what a newspaper of record means and the vocabulary that to kids don't get, and to understand how the media has changed. And so I teach them at the traditional media source is, you know, what I used to do as a researcher. When I was in school, we didn't have the internet. So this is how I try to teach them that, you know, these are much better sources to use because of the accuracy. There's people that are checking it. Mm-hmm. There's an editorial content.
Right. Okay. Thanks so much, Susan. Susan, thanks very much for your comments. I just want to make sure our lines are full. I want to get to as many calls as possible. And I also want to get to our next guest, Hiawatha Bray, who's the Boston Globe technology writer. And he is going to talk to us a little bit about the technology companies and what they've said about these issues of fake news on social media. Hiawatha, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So in your latest piece for the Globe, you wrote that companies like Facebook and Google could have cracked down on fake news sites years ago, but we're talking about big audiences and big dollars. How much money here?
Well, of course, because these companies have profited from allowing these guys to use their ad networks. They sell ads through the Google and Facebook networks, and as a result, Facebook and Google have frankly been complicit in helping to spread stuff that's absolute nonsense. I mean, just the other day I was on my Facebook page, and there was this thing telling me that Billy Graham was dead. And of course he's not, thank God. He's 98 years old, but very much alive. But one of these fake news sites is actually advertising on Facebook that Billy Graham is dead, an absolute factual falsehood. And they've also put up something that suggested that Clint Eastwood was dead. And they've been doing this kind of things for years, and Facebook could have done more to stop it. But now, all of a sudden, they're finally taking action, and that's a good thing. The question is, can they do it without engaging in censorship?
Right.
Because you don't want Facebook or Google or any of these other guys taking it upon themselves to say, we're not going to allow you to say anything at all. That is something, luckily, they seem to have no desire to do.
Now, Google and Facebook have said that they will bar sites that publish fake news stories from joining the company's advertising networks.
Right.
And Facebook employees reportedly say that they're forming a task force to see if and how they might better regulate information. Do you think these are effective steps, or are there other things they should be doing?
Well, I think they're trying to figure out what they can do. I wrote about this, these people, computer science students, at one of them's at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, that is trying to do something that they're also thinking about here, which is to try to come up with an automated way of looking at a news story and saying, can we rely on this? And what they're doing, they've created an extension that goes inside the Chrome browser called FIB, F-I-B. And what it tries to do is it's going to flag your Facebook page if a story on it is verified or not verified. It's not going to try to censor it. What they're going to do is go to these websites that are considered trusted websites. And if the story comes from a trusted website, they'll give it a verified tag. If it didn't come from a trusted website, they will go to Microsoft's Bing search engine and try to find the same story at some place that's considered trustworthy. And if they can't, then they'll say, this isn't verified. You might not want to treat it like it's gospel. That's the kind of thing that Facebook is also looking at. Not saying you can't say this, but flagging stories and saying, we're not sure this is true. And that's probably the direction they ought to go in.
I just wonder, some of the things that you've spoken about and that Melissa has spoken about as well, it seems like you're asking folks, I understand that people have to think critically, but as we all know, folks are really pressed for time. And I think that particularly people who are relying on instant information online and younger people, they expect it to be quick and they expect it to be there. Asking folks to take these extra steps to verify this information, is that realistic? Do you think they're going to really do that? How often?
Well, I think they have to, and I don't think this is anything new. I mean, there is nothing new about the fact that you can't simply believe what you read in the papers. By the way, there's this hilarious and rather brutal piece that ran on this conservative website, the Free Beacon, Washington Free Beacon, where they are talking about fake news in the context of how the New York Times covered the presidential election. And they go through this list of New York Times reports that turned out to be absolutely wrong. And they're basically saying, look, if the mainstream media can make mistakes this big, why are you surprised that people believe fake news? Mm-hmm. It's a real problem. It isn't just about the technology of fake news. It's also about preserving the credibility of American journalism, which is really suffering partly because of the financial condition of American journalism. They can't afford to hire as many people to do as much in-depth research. American press is making more mistakes, getting more stories wrong, and that's going to make it easier for fake news to thrive. Mm-hmm. But it also requires that consumers start being more critical of all their news sources. But that's something you should be doing anyway.
Okay, I want to make sure we get some of our listeners in. Corey is calling from Brookline. Corey, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I was going to say, I really see it as a matter of effort. You can report the election. The last five, six years or so, you know, when I see fake news stories posted on Facebook, I typically Google it. If it's not a website that I know, a mainstream, you know, journalistic website, I Google it. I try to find out. Is this a blog? Is this a hoax? I mean, I might be biased. I don't know. I work in education. I work at a middle school. I was a full-time graduate student up until about a year ago. So it's pretty simple for me. You know, if I see something that looks a little sensationalistic or I don't see other credible websites reporting on it, I can decipher it, and I'm always surprised to see when even my friends and my news feed who post certain things, and I'm like, that's a hoax. That's completely false.
So you've never been taken in. You've never been taken in by a fake news story.
No.
I think it's pretty simple.
I'm actually too embarrassed to, before I post something on my own news feed, I want to verify it. You know, I mean, I have colleagues that have friends. For me, I wouldn't want to look like a jerk, I feel like. So I feel like it's pretty simple. And I also think technology, it's so easy to click on these things and just people want to share. It takes a moment, I feel like. It really does. I mean, to me, it's like writing a paper, you know, works cited, you know, and I think that if a minimal effort, you can kind of decipher what's real and what isn't.
Okay. So, all right, Corey, thanks so much for weighing in here. You think it's a relatively easy process. We shouldn't be fooled. So does that mean no censorship, Corey?
I do believe, you know, I think some censorship, you know.
Should Facebook take more responsibility?
I do think that, you know, stories that are grossly untrue, I mean, if it's for entertainment purposes, that's one thing. But, I mean, I feel like with this election in particular, where, you know, this is a very controversial election, you have people who are looking for things, even if they weren't untrue, they wanted to believe them. And I think, you know, in that vein, I think some censorship or maybe some type of filter to, you know, weed out something that's egregiously untrue might be beneficial. I do believe that.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to take another call here. Jim is calling from Merrimack. Jim, you're on the air.
Thanks, Deborah. And I'm glad you're covering this. For me, I mean, I certainly agree that within social media, these clickbait, fake, for-profit news sites are a severe problem. But I honestly believe that they're born out of a much larger problem that's developed over the last 15 to 20 years, which is for-profit, hyper-partisan media. There's a bunch of media companies out there that call themselves news, and I'm not going to name any names. They exist on both sides of the aisle, that are pushing an agenda, and it is for-profit information. And if users don't take the time to go to sites like, you know, the Congressional Budget Office or the Bureau of Labor Statistics to verify some of the stories that are being pushed, then you really can't help them. You really can't. And I don't think it's the job of social media to filter out news which is coming through a profit channel for them. It's challenging, but I do believe it's a symptom of a much larger problem.
But it's all, you know, news has always been a profitable operation, and I'm not saying that you know, certain things, money shouldn't be looked at, but I'm wondering what you think of the idea of trying to edit, if you will, censor, regulate the information on social media sites like Facebook and Google, and who should do that? Whose responsibility is it to make sure that unbiased information is getting out?
I certainly agree that, I mean, they should take some editorial responsibility for what's going up. And if they can verify that it's a fraud site that's scamming people out of money or things like that, certainly, yeah, I do think that they have an editorial responsibility there. But I don't completely agree that all media is for profit. If you go back 30 years, the network news divisions for CBS, ABC, and NBC were cost centers. They weren't profit centers for those networks. And they had a lot more journalistic integrity than what we see in the 24-hour news network that is purely for profit today. I think this has been going on for quite a while. It's just getting worse.
All right, Jim, thanks very much for being with us. I want to just give the last couple of minutes here to Hiawatha and Melissa. Hiawatha, first off, when you hear this from our listeners, what do you say about this? And do you think that technology companies can do an adequate job of regulating the information to try to make sure it's more balanced?
I don't think they should be regulating it in the sense of, for example, censoring it or anything like that. I think they have a responsibility to flag information which is egregiously false and simply say, hey, we don't know for sure whether you can believe this. You know, a lot of harm, I think, might have been done by that whole trending topics controversy earlier in the year where Facebook got rid of human editors and let computers just put stuff out there based on how many people wanted to read it. Because back when they had humans doing it, they filtered out a lot of the dumber stories because humans said that can't be right. And now they're trying to do it with computers, and computers are throwing up a lot of bad information. I think Facebook is going to have to hire editors ultimately and start thinking of itself more as an information organization, but not to censor the stuff, just to flag it and say, here, you can read this if you want to, but be aware this may not be true.
Melissa Zimdars, you've said that all of this debate about fake news might help real news get better. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think if some real news sites started covering news in a more thorough way, or covering stories that, affect people. For example, there's been a near media blackout of the Dakota Access Pipeline stuff that's been happening, and people are interested in it. My students didn't know about it, and they want to. So, you know, maybe people would turn less to some of the hyper-partisan or fake or clickbaity sites if traditional media was serving them better.
All right. Melissa Zimdars, assistant professor of communication and media at Merrimack College. Thanks for being with us. Hiawatha Bray, technology writer for the business section of the Boston Globe. Thanks to you for being with us as well.
Glad to be here.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston. Thank you.